There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And, of course, you're a big part of the show at 343-0106 on the text line or the phone line. And we're starting off with where the eyes of anybody with a political eye in this country is looking, not only at Washington, D.C., but the House of Representatives right now, as the House is debating the articles of impeachment. To give us some more insight on what's happening, I mean, right now in the House, our Congressman, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, joins us. Congressman, thanks for your time.
Sean, as always, it's good to be with you, but not today.
Yeah,
it's a bad day.
Yeah, so explain to us just a little bit of the mechanism of, we thought there was debate going on, you know, and we realized there's committee debate, then it's out of committee, then there's been some other debate. What is going on now? Are there still, is it rules over the impeachment, or is it more people trying to make their case? You spoke this morning. What were you speaking about?
I was speaking on the rules that were going to govern the debate. That's what first vote was today. I had offered an amendment to the Articles of Impeachment, and the Rules Committee ruled that out of order, and so they did not bring it before the House. And so what I was talking about today, this morning, was about my amendment, why I thought it should have been included. I'll be speaking to the substance of the impeachment later on this afternoon.
Okay, and but you know, whether they thought it was out of order or not, I think it's interesting. Tell folks back here at home, your amendment to the Articles of Impeachment. I mean, this was an interesting process here, because you brought back some memories of what happened with Obama and Holder.
Right. So I was the only member of the House to offer an amendment, and it was pretty straightforward. The second article of impeachment against President Trump says that he should be impeached because he has withheld some of people that work for him and some documents from Congress. Now, every president, beginning with George Washington, has asserted executive privilege as to the people that work for them and as to certain documents. That is time-honored, been done for a long time, and the courts have upheld it. So not unusual for presidents to do that. What my amendment did was, is it substituted for President Trump's conduct the conduct of President Barack Obama and his Attorney General, Eric Holder, when they withheld documents for years from Congress over this Fast and Furious investigation where they took the guns across the border into Mexico and somehow they came back and were used to murder a law enforcement agent in the United States. So, you know, that was a terrible incident. And Obama and Holder tried to keep Congress from getting any information about that. We ultimately had a vote that held Holder in contempt of Congress. And virtually every one of the Democrats every one of the Democrats who are today trying to impeach President Trump for withholding documents voted against holding Eric Holder in contempt of Congress for doing the exact same thing. If you use the standard that they're using against President Trump today, we not only should have held Eric Holder in contempt, we should have impeached and removed him and impeached and removed Barack Obama. I'm showing their hypocrisy.
And, because people remember here, one of these articles of impeachment, the obstruction of Congress, and that, I mean, that's what they're saying, because the president didn't give them everything they wanted, that he was obstructing Congress, right? Something I'm trying to understand here.
Well, we've never impeached a president for obstruction of Congress. They have been impeached for obstruction of justice, but not obstruction of Congress. Here's the way Congress enforces its subpoenas. You send it over to the White House. The White House says no. You negotiate with the White House, or you just take it to court. And the courts do not unusually, rule for Congress and force the president to produce documents and people for testimony. They didn't bother to do that, and the reason they didn't was is that it would take time, and they needed to get this over before Christmas because they need, for their moderates, so-called moderates on the Democratic side, they need some time between their vote for impeachment and when the elections occur next November, so hopefully their constituents will forget what they've done. I don't think that's going to work, but that's why we are where we are. Plus, they're, I think that we're going to lose some of these anyway, because the president, I think, is well within his right to say, no, they don't have to come over there and testify.
Yeah, and I want to get into how this affects some of these Democrats voting today. But this idea, and I want to remind folks, you know, we learned this back in civics class, right? Co-equal branches of government. So if Congress asks something of, if the legislative branch asks something of the executive branch, the president, and they say no, they would have to, like you said, bring in the judicial branch to make a decision. They can't just say, we want it, and if you say no, then we're going to impeach you for obstruction of Congress.
Until today.
Right.
That has never been tried until today.
Because
and it just shows you how far we've come. This is not a real impeachment. This is just a political ploy on their part. And this is going to come back and bite them. And that was the other message I delivered in my remarks this morning. I mean, they set this new standard, and they're going to wake up one day and rue the day that they did this. Because they're going to have a president in there at some point that's going to be somebody they like. And that president's not going to send over some documents or some witnesses. And we're going to be in power. And then they've established the new standard that we can impeach a president for that. Now, I don't want us to do that. I want us to get back to sanity in this country and sanity here in Washington. Because what we're doing today is insanity, particularly when you know, and we know this, the Senate is not going to remove him.
Right.
They're going to get it over there right after the first of the year, and they're going to make short work of this. And then what? What do we do? You turn around and say, okay, we got to work with the president. We just impeached. No, they're going to continue to fight him on everything. So this is the new normal for the United States. I hate to say it, but I think this is the new normal.
Well, that's what I had in my notes to ask you about. I said, will this be the new norm, impeachment use as a political bludgeon here, that this is not, I mean, people think about the gnashing of teeth and the wringing of hands over the filibuster and having majorities and supermajorities. Now this might be the new norm.
Oh, yeah. I think this may exactly be the new norm, which is exactly what the founders did not want. When they debated the standards for impeachment, they rejected words like maladministration. You know, they didn't want to be in a position where the Congress could second-guess the president and throw him out of office. So we're going against the founders when we impeach somebody because we politically disagree with them. This is what happened with Andrew Johnson in 1868. You had the Republicans controlling the House. He was a Democrat. They impeached him just because they disagreed with the way he was handling Reconstruction. Fortunately, it got over to the Senate. The Senate said, look, you know, this has got to be, it's got to be more than this. There's no crime here. This man hasn't done anything that's objectionable under the Constitution. We may disagree with him, may not like him, may not want him to be president, but the standard's higher than that. These Democrats today are lowering the standard from that and from what the Founding Fathers wanted.
Yeah, you mentioned the disagreement thing, and that's one of the talking points I've heard coming out of Washington from Republicans. They're saying, hey, what the Democrats have is an issue with policy with President Trump, a disagreement with policy, and they're trying to make it into a question of whether he committed a high crime or a misdemeanor.
Well, they don't allege a crime in either one of these articles. They don't even mention a crime in either one of these articles.
But isn't that supposed to be the standard, Congressman,
yeah,
for impeachment?
Yes. Yes. Now, when Bill Clinton was impeached, remember, he had committed perjury.
Perjury.
Now, it was in a civil deposition, and when, you know, it was about, you know, his multiple affairs with women outside of his marriage. And so when it got to the Senate, they said, okay, yes, it's a crime, but it's not a high crime. So the Senate has basically set some standards here. Number one, we don't do it just for politics. And number two, we don't do it even if there's a crime. It has to be a high crime. So they didn't even allege any crime here. They didn't even say that he jaywalked across the street. And this is preposterous what they're doing. So, by the way, some of them know it. They've told me we have just got to get through this and move on. And I'm just going to tell you, some of these Democrats, freshmen that were elected from Trump districts that are going to vote for this today, they're going to pay for it next November. And I think some of them know it.
I wonder with that if there'll be any kind of political cover, because if you're a Democrat, you could say, hey, listen, you have the votes without me. I'm not going to vote to impeach so I can stay and keep the Democrats in control in whatever district and whatever state. If you look at, you know, I heard Speaker Pelosi last week, of course, about fell out of my chair when she said she wasn't counting the votes, wasn't whipping the votes. I have trouble believing that because I think she wants the reinforcement of as many Democrats voting with her as possible, right? That she can say, look at everybody's doing this.
Absolutely. And there is maximum pressure on all these Democrats, so much so that one Democrat who said, I just can't do it, is switching parties, Jeff Van Drew. So we know there's enormous pressure on them. And it's, as I say, it's going to cost some of them their seats, I think more than a few, as a matter of fact. So we don't know exactly how many of them are going to come over and vote with us. They're going to be a couple at least. We'll see when the votes are taken this evening, tonight. But don't make any mistake about this. She and the Democratic apparatus and all the support groups out there are putting maximum pressure on these Democrats. I don't think we're going to lose a single Republican vote, and I think we'll have at least a few Democrats come over and vote with us.
Of course, she set herself up early on, right, and said what she was saying. She thought impeachment would needed to be bipartisan, right? Mm-hmm. That of course, that all changed back in September. You remember, you and I were sitting together in Washington when this all got cranked back up.
You were up here for that immigration thing that they set up here. We have various radio hosts like you come up for that. You just happened to be here the very same week that she got up and said, okay, we're going to do an impeachment investigation. And I told you at the time, I said, this is going to suck all of the political oxygen out of the room, and buddy has it ever.
Called that shot for sure. Coming right back, more with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. He is in between speeches in the House, first on the rules, and then be voting tonight on the articles of impeachment. Sounds like the Republicans will have some Democrats voting with them. Doesn't sound like there will be any Republicans voting with the Democrats. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:21, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with AL1's Congressman, candidate for Senate, Bradley Byrne, who is, of course, at his job right now. Not the best day to be doing the job in Washington as the impeachment vote is coming up this afternoon, right, Congressman? Sometime?
It should be coming up, I think, about 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Central Time.
You and I were talking during the news break. I just pulled the curtain back here for a second, and you talked about just there's just not a case. The Democrats are, you know, running this through. They have control in the House. It will go to the Senate and go nowhere. Just your sense was, I mean, we heard Pelosi was very slow to move on this. Do you think at any point they wish they could have bailed or gone for a censure or something? Do you talk to people in the hallways that tell you that?
No, I think that they're sort of resigned to the fact that once she got up in September, that week you were here, and said we're going to have this investigation, that they were locked into having to go forward with this. They know it's going to cost them politically. They know that they're going to lose some members over this. They've already lost one member before they even get started. So, I mean, their base is pushing them in this direction, and it's not good for them. And so in order to try to give some cover to her moderates, she brings up the National Defense Authorization Act last week, which you remember when I was on your show, we talked about how partisan it was when it came out of the House.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they caved on everything, Sean. They just caved. They were so desperate to get something, they just gave in to us on everything.
So,
and then they bring up this trade deal. They're going to impeach the president today, and then they're going to pass a signature trade agreement with Mexico and Canada tomorrow. That's also to give them some cover. They know that they've got a problem.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I mean, when they made the announcement, about moving forward here on this vote, at the same time the day they decided to say they were on board for the USMCA, it seemed like they couldn't give President Trump a win on this. Because, I mean, you talk about, you're correct. I mean, this is absolutely signature Donald Trump. But they're trying to squash it. I mean, they want to vote for it, but they don't want anybody to pay attention to it, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think people are still going to be paying attention tomorrow when we have the vote on USMCA. We had Ambassador Lighthizer was with us twice yesterday. I had a chance to talk to him at length. And I thanked him for all the great work he's done on this and on the other trade deals he's done. He looked at me, he said, let me tell you something. this Mexico-Canada deal is going to send so many jobs to Alabama, y'all are going to sink into the earth. And I said, well, we'd love to be able to do that.
Bring them.
This is a huge victory for Donald Trump to get this trade deal done. A huge victory.
What about the spending package? We're looking at $1.4 trillion, Congressman Byrne. I mean, you know how I am. I worry about our spending.
Well, I didn't vote for it. And I'll tell you the biggest reason I didn't vote for it. I didn't get it until yesterday morning.
What?
I had to vote on it yesterday afternoon. It's 2,600 pages. I can't in good conscience vote for something I can't read and understand. But the sheer size of it was enough to keep me from voting for it as well. Look, when you're in good economic times, you should be resolving your deficit, not adding to it. And what we're doing now is we're missing the opportunity in these good economic times to cut back on spending. And in order to get a deal done with the Democrats, the Republicans in the Senate are just basically saying, okay, how much money do you have to have for domestic spending? And then we'll tell you how much money we got to have for defense spending. We'll just cobble it together and call it a spending bill. I think it's the swampiest thing I've seen since I've been here.
Yes.
I voted against it.
It's business. I mean, that is what I've been complaining about for on the show for a decade. I mean, that is just we shouldn't be spending so much, so we may take a cut, so y'all will take a cut. No, it's y'all get some stuff, and we get some more stuff.
Well, we can't. I mean, there's a day of reckoning out there, Sean. You just can't keep doing this. But this is what the swamp has done. Now, look, I'm a huge defense hawk. You know that. You and I have had this discussion many times, and I'm delighted that we have increased defense spending by almost 30% over the last 3 years. But at some point, we got to understand that strengthening the country militarily is not it does not outweigh the fact that we're weakening the country ultimately economically, because that military might is undergirded by our economic power, and that is going to be in peril if we don't stop doing this.
All right. I want to shift gears, even though I know you're busy in the House, but let's talk a little bit about the Senate race. And I've been following, you're spending time, and I understand it. We've talked about it in the past in other parts of the state than back here in Southwest Alabama, because we all know your name down here.
Right. And they don't in Birmingham area, the Huntsville area. So we're spending a lot of time up there. We actually started running some television ads up there earlier this month, and we're getting really good response. But, it's Christmas time, and the election's still over 2 months away. So I understand that people aren't, exactly just focusing all their attention on this. We're getting our name ID up there where we need to get it, and as people start paying more attention to the race after New Year's and probably even later in January, early February, we're going to be in the right position to win the race.
All right. You've had some things to say about at least two of your competitors in this primary as of late, about Tuberville and Sessions. By the way, side note, Tuberville called Jeff Sessions a traitor in one of his comments. Do you agree? Do you back him on that?
No. I think that's totally inappropriate. Now, I've got my differences with Jeff right now, don't get me wrong, but he is not and never has been a traitor. And this is Tuberville not having any sense of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. It is inappropriate to call Jeff Sessions a traitor.
Explain to me on your issues with Jeff Sessions about the recusal. Why shouldn't he have recused himself? Because he says the rules compelled him to recuse himself.
Well, only if he really had a conflict. And if you read the Mueller report, which I have, and if you read the IG report, as I have, there wasn't a conflict there. There wasn't anything there. But if he really thought he needed to recuse himself, he shouldn't have recused himself. He should have resigned, because he did not perform the job that President Trump and the rest of us needed him to do as our Attorney General. And if he was so compromised that he couldn't get involved with these things we see in the IG report, then he shouldn't have been Attorney General. He should have said, look, I can't perform my job. I need to resign. And he didn't do it, because this was his career ambition to be Attorney General of the United States, and that was more important to him than making sure that he's serving the country. And I fault him for that, and I know the president really faults him for that.
Yeah, I'll get into that in a second, but I'm interesting. So you have a nuanced angle on this that I hadn't heard. So the nuance is, if he was going to recuse himself, he should have resigned. If he felt compelled by the rules that he couldn't be there, he should have resigned. It's not, you're not saying that maybe he, in his judgment, he couldn't be part of it. Your problem is with the second part. He, instead of recusing, he should have resigned.
Yes. And I said that a number of times already. I mean, if you look at what Bill Barr, the present attorney general, is doing, that is what Jeff should have been doing all along. And if you look at this inspector general report, which ought to cause every American to have real concerns, this we should have been dealing with that 3 years ago. I mean, the moment he got his attorney general, he should have been dealing with that problem with these FISA warrants. I mean, this is trampling on basic rights of Americans, what they did. And by taking himself off the field, Jeff didn't have an adult in the room. Well, now we got an adult in the room. You're seeing the difference that it makes. There is a swamp over there at the Justice Department. There's a swamp over there in the FBI. And somebody's going to have to clean house. It's going to be Bill Barr, but it should have been Jeff Sessions. And if he couldn't do that because of the recusal rules, and I don't agree with him about recusal, but if that was his decision, he should have resigned.
All right. One last one here, because you mentioned the president's issues with Jeff Sessions. Do you think President Trump will get involved in this Republican primary? I mean, I'm thinking back to the special and what happened. Do you think President Trump comes in and gets involved before March 3rd?
I think it's likely. I don't speak for the president. I've been with him. I was with him last week. And every time I'm with him, he wants to talk about the Senate race. He had another Alabama congressman and some of our leadership with him later on last week, and he asked them about the Senate race in Alabama. He's watching it very carefully. It would be totally out of character for him not to say something. And he will at some point. I'm not going to tell you when or what, but he will say something at some point. He is very unhappy with Jeff Sessions. That has not changed. And I don't think as he gets close to elections that he's going to be quiet about it.
There we go. Congressman Bradley Byrne, candidate for U.S. Senate. We'll be watching you at that when the vote rolls this evening, about 6 o'clock our time, you said?
Should be about 6 o'clock your time, and I should be speaking on the floor sometime between about 2 o'clock your time and 4 o'clock your time.
All right. We'll be watching for it. Thanks for checking in.
All right. Good to talk to you.
Merry Christmas. Hey, Merry Christmas to your whole crew.
Thank you.
All right, coming right back. Grab your phone calls, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1236 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Reminder, day three of our Alabamian of the Year voting. It's on the front page of FMTalk1065.com, right under the 1-800-GOT-JUNK banner. Day three here. Remember how this works. Y'all did all the nomination of the people, places, things, entities, whatever, that make it into the mix for Alabamian of the Year, which is that person, place, thing, entity, critter, whatever, that most moved the needle in Alabama in 2019. What most influenced the news cycle. It can be positive. It could be for the negative. It's just that thing that's the biggest story in Alabama. And today, this round is a mix between politicos and substances. Okay, so we are in the number three bracket of five this week. So it's the first round, and we're the third day of five. And today, remember, the top two vote-getters move on to the next round. Today, Governor Ivey, Jeff Sessions, which I, Senator, Attorney General. You're supposed to call him, by the way, you're supposed to call somebody by their last title. But I figure he was in the Senate a lot longer than he was Attorney General, so I'm still stuck with the Senator thing. But Jeff Sessions, head of the Alabama, well, it depends. Head of one portion of the Alabama Democrat Party, Nancy Worley, a splinter group now, and CBD. CBD. So those are your choices today. You vote online, front page of FMTalk1065.com, and go ahead and put your vote in, and then we tally these votes, and tomorrow we'll report what happened today and set a whole new list up. That's on the front page of FMTalk1065.com. All right, phone lines 343-0106, and same for the text, free text, 343-0106. And I'm looking at this text from Chris. He said, I need help understanding something dealing with the impeachment proceedings. At first, all the investigations were about Trump allegedly cheating on the 2016 election. That would be the Russia collusion stuff. Now it suddenly changed to a discussion of him cheating on the 2020 elections. What changed? What proof of him cheating on the upcoming elections? Listen, the argument that's being made is that President Trump, when he made the perfect call to Zelensky, right, was trying to get the Ukrainians to get dirt for him on Biden. right? That they he needed that to get Ed. The argument from Republic. First of all, let's back up and say, if this is either way, is this a high crime or misdemeanor? That's one of the questions. But that's not what they're charging the president with. They're charging him with obstruction of Congress. But if it depends on how you look at this, right? Do you see this as him trying to do some research and ferreting out corruption and seeing what the Democrats were doing with the Ukraine? Or was he trying to get Zelensky to give him dirt on Biden that could he use in 2020? But that's not what the thing is, though. That's the problem, Chris. That's a interesting discussion, but that's not what's being brought up in the articles of impeachment right now. That's what leaves people like you and me and so many scratching our heads. I tell you what, I've got a story here from Fox News from DeRoy Murdoch, and I think it's worth talking about here. So let's run through this, Chris. It's a little bit of adjunct to what you're talking about. Headline here: Trump impeachment articles incredibly light. It says President Trump has called his current travails impeachment light. The articles of impeachment on which the U.S. House of Representatives is set to vote Wednesday to confirm his assessment. To fathom the unbearable lightness of the anti-Trump articles of impeachment, just compared to those used against Presidents William Jefferson Clinton and Richard Milhouse Nixon. All right. First, in terms of verbosity, the three anti-Nixon articles totaled 1,558 words. The four anti-Clinton articles reached 1,515 words. And the two anti-Trump articles equal 1,321 words. By this measure, the anti-Trump articles are 15% skimpier than those used against Nixon and 13% skimpier than those used against Clinton. Second, in terms of criminality, the anti-Nixon articles list actual offenses such as illegal entry into private property, remember that Watergate place, silencing witnesses, and obstruction of justice. Now remember, there's a key word there, because obstruction of justice has not been leveled at President Trump. It's obstruction of Congress. It's Congress asking for something, the legislative branch asking something from the co-equal branch of government, the executive branch, and the executive branch saying, nah. Which in the case, in a normal procedure, you would go to the third branch and compel the judicial branch to take up the case and have the judicial branch compel the executive branch to give the information and the people's testimony to the legislative. But they didn't do that. They didn't do that. All right. So it goes on to say, DeRoy Murdoch in the story says, the anti-Clinton articles also delineate violations of the law, including perjury, witness tampering, concealment of evidence, and obstruction of justice. Okay, so twice, obstruction of justice, not Congress. He goes on to write, the anti-Trump articles assert, quote, a scheme or course of conduct for corrupt purposes, end quote. Schemes and courses of conduct are not prima facie or illegal. The rest is entirely debatable. I agree with DeRoy on that. Democrats call this crooked. Republicans counter that President Trump was fighting corruption in Ukraine, hardly a corrupt purpose. Democrats also claim that President Trump, quote, ignored and injured the interest of the nation, end quote. This, too, is not a statutory violation. Republicans correctly have argued for a decade that Obamacare ignored and injured the interest of the nation. But President Barack Obama did not face impeachment for that gargantuan failure. What a great couple sentences from DeRoy. Because you cannot like something. You cannot like something. Or the person that brings it, and at the same time realize impeachment's not the mechanism. So Murdoch goes on to say, thus, the anti-Trump articles list no laws broken or crimes committed. Third, in terms of chronology, the anti-Nixon articles cite five dates on which malfeasance occurred. The anti-Clinton articles record 14 such dates, and the anti-Trump articles specify zero dates on which impeachable offenses supposedly unfolded. And fourth, in terms of gravity, the anti-Nixon articles chronicle major wrongdoing. This includes White House-connected intruders breaking into the DNC at Watergate office. They also, the same so-called plumbers, of course, who plugged the news leaks out there, remember, reading the book, right? Sneaking into the LA office of Dr. Lewis Fielding, the psychiatrist to the Pentagon Papers chief leaker, Daniel Ellsberg, the covert cash payments of hush money to the plumbers, the electronic surveillance of private citizens, and the abusing of the CIA to shut down the FBI investigation of the burglaries and their subsequent cover-up. The little reminder on what was being leveled there at Nixon before he went stepping out the White House. The anti-Clinton articles discuss Clinton's perjury in the Paula Jones sexual harassment case, the concealment of evidence, namely hiding Monica Lewinsky's DNA-stained dress in a box beneath the bed of Clinton's personal secretary, Beth Curry, and lying to witnesses so they would repeat those lies to investigators and federal grand jurors. This constituted conspiracy with cooperative witnesses, as well as the deception of those who unwittingly repeated the lies they believed were true. The anti-Trump articles mention nothing this grave. Trump's phone conversation with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky involved no pressure or quid pro quo, at least according to 12 such exculpatory statements by Zelensky and other officials in Kiev. It also called obstruction of Congress. That's what they've accused President Trump of. And it's accused and involves the oft-repeated bipartisan tug-of-war between Congress and the executive branch. Trump's assertion of executive privilege is entirely precedented, if not routine. These disputes normally are settled in court. Remember what I told you about the judicial branch. The House withdrew from such litigation, all the better to speed towards today's Christmas season impeachment. Fifth, in terms of sensory perception, the anti-Trump articles differ from those against Nixon and Clinton in this respect. They claim to be psychic. Article 1 states, President Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to national security and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office. So, DeRoy writes here, really? I'm with him. So, the first article here in this impeachment says, President Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to national security and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office. So, this article claims to know the future. Now, who knows what will happen next? And Article 2 here reads, President Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to the Constitution if allowed to remain in office. Once again, the article is saying they know what's going to happen next. So, yeah, I thought that was a good take. I'll put this up on my Twitter feed, at FM Talk 1065. You can read through what I thought was a great look at impeachment light. And that's maybe what they're running with. The Democrats are running impeachment light, but they're running hard with this one. Coming right back. Calls and text 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
Right, 1250 FM Talk 1065, Midday Mobile. Phone number 343-0106. Y'all say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Cool to get to hang out with the crew there on Friday and at least start some of the Christmas shopping. But for guys like us, Angelo, we got what? We got another 3 or 4 days where we really got to get cranking.
Yeah, at least a solid 3 days, maybe four if we really decide to push it. But for most people out there, you know, it's a week away. So the countdown has started and they're starting to feel the pressure. And as you can attest, you can pretty much come to Mobile Bay Coins and pick out everything for everybody on your list and get it all covered with really cool stuff.
You know, it is truly hard to say that about anywhere else. I know as I go through the trials and tribulations of doing Christmas shopping, y'all, this is a place you can get it done for everybody. Let's kind of run through that. I mean, first of all, let's talk jewelry, because that's going to be the big oh wow. Small boxes, you know, big fanning of the face. Oh, thank you. Let's talk about what the selection looks like.
Our selection is everything from really beautiful little sterling silver rings and earrings that are great for the nieces, the granddaughters, and very, very affordable. You can probably get a whole set of jewelry for the price you pay for one piece in the big box stores, all the way up to the 14 karat and 18 karat gold, emerald, diamonds, those oh wow bling kind of pieces, like you said, that sort of the jewelry launches the lady into the room or drags her into the room because they can't wait to show that off. And then, you know, you start looking at all the rare and cool coins we've got. Somebody that collects coins, we have everything from supplies to some really rare, amazing coins here in stock. Look at the gold and silver bullion, all the cool pop culture items. A lot of people don't know that there's Disney coins, there's Star Wars coins, there's John Wick coins, there's all the engravable pieces. And, of course, my favorite, that wall of OpenL knives, now that we are an official OpenL dealer for OpenL USA.
And, I mean, the selection, I didn't know what to expect because, I mean, I looked at all the great open L's y'all had in the past, and then I walk in there Friday, and you've got the open L wall, and it's awesome. I've been telling folks forever about picking up more than they think they need open L knives to have on hand for gifts they hadn't thought of or a party down the road, but now y'all have added so many more to that collection that you could get stuff for year after. You could have an open L and go ahead and stack 3 years, 4 years ahead for an individual. Like you have their Christmas present bought for the next 4 years.
You really could, because we've got the Open L outdoor knives in all sorts of different colors, including the new lemon and lime. We've got that Open L Explorer knife. We've got the ones with the olive wood handles. There's so many different versions. If you've got a knife collector in the family and you just know what you want to get, just stock up on a variety of Open L's. And those art knives that we've talked about have been extremely popular. One of our customers came in today, local chef actually, and he bought a dozen open L's for friends and family. Probably a few extras in there too.
It's a great gift idea. All right, people need to come look at the selection, so tell them how to find you.
We're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. They can always call us, 725-1590. Go onto the website, mobilebaycoins.com, or like and follow us on Facebook or now on Instagram.
All right, good stuff. And of course, check out the radio show on Tuesday nights.
Please do, right here on
106.5. All right, thanks, man. Let's do that. I want to read through some text here, too. Eric says, the only thing the Democrats have done with their impeachment craze is guarantee Trump's victory in 2020, and for that, I'm eternally grateful. And then he said something about Epstein. I don't know what in his text. But, okay, Eric, I'm with you. One of my questions, so let me go to my list. Here's like, because you should over-prepare. Like, you have an interview, like we had Congressman Byrne on, so I have more questions that I got to. But one of the ones that I did not get to is, let me find out what number this is. I've got a big list in front of me. Okay. Do you think, and Eric, this is for you, but this is one of the questions I ran out of time, did not get to ask Congressman. Do you think that if the chance of re-election was slim for President Trump, that the Democrats would be pushing this hard on the articles of impeachment? I think, Eric, I agree with you. I think there's a tell in it. And I'm not saying like I've like invented the cure for polio here or anything. I think it's pretty obvious. But, I mean, to put it into words, the fact that there's so many going to the mat on this with the Democrats. And I know they're gonna cloak it in the fact that their dedication to the Constitution, which I would love if I believed it was true. Because it's when you... You know, it's politically expedient, I guess, you have dedication to the Constitution. But do you think that the Democrats would be pushing this hard on these articles of impeachment? Because it's not going to go any... The Senate is not going to take the next step. The Senate is not going to remove President Trump. I told y'all in September when I was in Washington, right? And once again, I'm not acting like I'm the only guy saying this thing. But I said, they got the votes. What's happening today, I said back in September, what happened? I didn't know the date, but I said the Democrats will impeach the president. But there's another part of this, right? You have to have the Senate, that serves as the jury in this, vote to remove, and that's not happening. So what this is kabuki theater, right? It's to get a point on the driver's license for President Trump, right? Point against him, whatever you call those things, right? And points. So why are they doing that? They're doing it for no other reason than trying to affect 2020. And if Democrats are feeling heat in districts that the president won, if you had moderate Democrats out there feeling the heat and you're forcing them to go vote on these articles of impeachment and vote for it and possibly risk losing that seat for themselves and for Democrats out there, then there has to be some reason, because you know it's not going to end up in removal. If your tactic was, we must remove the president because we feel he's done such bad things, you know it's not going to happen in the Senate, so why do you continue to do it, and why do you compel the moderate Democrats to vote for it? It's because they're looking at 2020 and realizing they don't have a candidate right now, and there may be some sleeper out there that we don't know about. But with the Democrats lined up, you can look at the polling, you can just talk to folks sitting on their front porch. There's no Democrat that's shining right now out there that looks like they would easily beat President Trump. So what this is about is the Democrats, every bit of effort you've seen from all Democrats, I mean, but from Schiff and Nadler, and this is all about the fact that they realize how it looks like President Trump could win re-election in 2020. So that's why they're pushing this hard on something that will bear no fruit. I guess if you take the fruit is the fact that they did it and they impeached the president. But if the fruit was removing President Trump, it's not going to happen. So why would you get your... I mean, think about it strategically. If you've got a Democrat that won in a district where Trump won, you've got a foothold in a place. Don't you want to hold on to that as Democrats? But no, you're forcing those people to vote in something they could lose the next election. Why? Because that district is less important than the White House. And that's why, even though there's no chance of removal, Democrats have gone to the mattress on this one. All right, 12:58. We'll be right back. News is next.